Let's go back to this great word. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing it correctly. Malachi. I'm letting somebody else define who knows it. That's how. But please allow me to speak during my time. Alright? Just like I allow Pat to speak during her time. Here's the people who know the Greek. These are experts in the Greek. I'm not. This is how they define it. John Scott. It meant males, not necessarily boys, who play the passive role in homosexual intercourse. R. and Gingrich, famous Bible dictionary. They're defining the Greek word, not the English. The one that's actually in the Greek text. A person, soft, effeminate, especially catamites, men and boys allow themselves to be misused homosexually. Thayer, effeminate, of a catamite, a male who submits his body to a natural lewdness. Now, Pat mentioned about this word about soft rain. Many words have two different meanings. Like, I thought of just some examples while she was speaking. We talk about one in the King James Version of the Old Testament, the word no, K-N-O-W. And most of the time, you see the word no, you're just talking about whether you're acquainted with the person. But we all know that, or recognize in the King James Version, some of the older translations, they use the word no, K-N-O-W, like we use the word sleep as a euphemism for sexual relations. Think about this word. Many of us are kind of the same age, or in the same range. I'm 45. Just in our generation, the word cool. You want to wait for your speech and ask it, and I'll answer.
Because I'm a pastor. I just want to know. Do you want this to go on this way?
No.
Because I don't want you to feel abused in this place. So if you're telling me that you can sit through it and feel okay, fine. But if you're telling me that you're feeling abused, then I'm going to stop it. And I don't care what you're doing with me previously. I'm not going to lie to you.
I came all the way from Alabama for this. Remember that?
Bobby, I'm just going to ask you to slow down because sometimes the points that you're really trying to make get lost. It sounds like it's been a long time to come again. This is the first time doing it.
Good point. I'll try to slow down.
Are we okay? Can we have a question time after this next? This is the last and then we'll have a question. Is that right?
According to the schedule, we'll have maybe a 5-minute break where we can stretch or go to the bathroom, and then another 20-minute speech by each person. Now, we didn't actually agree to a question and answer publicly, but I'm willing to do that if we can keep it orderly. We didn't agree to that, but Pat and I'm willing to agree that Pat wants to do it, and we can keep it orderly. What I would propose, and I've done a number of these in the past, is that people present, I prefer, written questions. And then Pat has a minute to answer, and I have a minute to answer. The next question, I have a minute to answer, she has a minute to respond.
I think it's valuable for people to find out. I'd like to know more about how your ideas form, or comparing some of the things as opposed to just being presented and this or that.
I'm also happy to talk to anyone after the debate's over. You can ask me one-on-one, and we can perhaps better explain in more detail. Okay?
Are you okay with
this? Yeah. Yes, sir. He told me my time and took it until I started speaking again. Okay. I'll try to explain. These are people who define the Greek words, the most famous, Art and Gingrich, Thayer, Strong, Wide and Green. If you go out and trying to study the Bible, I don't know the Greek or the Hebrew, so when you're trying to, just like when we're, there's a word you don't understand in English, maybe you're reading something, you might go to Webster's to define it. Well, people are trying to study the Bible. Pat knows about these works. These are works you find at the library. These are the most famous people defining the Greek words for us. That's who they are. Now, Pat mentioned about this word called, here's another example I was going to give for our generation, the word cool. When we were young boys, cool always meant, there may be some other definition. It meant, like, some of the water that we were drinking today, we were hoping it was cool and not hot. Cool. Not cold, but cool. Then, of course, it came along and meant, like Fonzie, that kind of cool. These words have different meanings. But here, we're not talking about somebody being condemned because their raiment if wool or some other thing is softer, like silk. That's not a matter of sin. Now, we're talking about that. This word, in this context, according to these people who know the Greek and are defining the Greek, say it means, yes, effeminate, soft in the sense of the one, the gay man who takes the feminine role in the homosexual relationship, and that verse is condemning. And then, number eight, Alan, arsenokeotis, where she said it had to do with the male band. This is the way it's defined. One who lies with males with a female, sodomite, Arden Gilbert, a male homosexual, strong to sodomite, wide and green, male homosexual. You look at your translation. If you have your Bibles, here's a bunch of the newer translations that we have out there. You see how it's translated. These people are trying to tell you what the Greek meant, because we don't, most of us don't read Greek. So they try to translate the Greek force into the equivalent in English. So this is not just me. These are the people. If you were talking about English, it would be like the Websters of English or Random House. They're giving us the definition for these Greek words. And these passages are saying this is wrong. They're listed among other sins like fornication, idolatry, murder, and things like that in the same context. Now let's look at Romans 1. Appreciate the argument that Pat made comparing that to Romans chapter 11, 21 through 24. Put up number 18, Alan. Now Romans chapter 11, 21 and 24, Paul is not saying that God did something unnatural. Paul, and remember his people at that time before, were the chosen people were the Jews. But then under the New Testament times, it doesn't matter. Male or female doesn't matter. It doesn't matter whether you're Jew or Greek, Galatians 3:28. He brought in the Gentiles. Well, at this point in this juncture, Paul is telling the Jews and anybody else, look, God had the right to do this. Now notice verse 21. Says, for if God spared not the natural branches, take heed lest he also spare not thee. See the word also? It's an analogy. What's the analogy here? Look at verse 24. For if thou wert cut off out of the olive tree, which is wild by nature, he's talking to the Jews, and were grafted contrary to nature and turned into a good olive tree, I guess he's talking to the Gentiles here, excuse me. He took, the Gentiles are compared to taking a branch from a wild olive tree and grafting into a tame, a good olive tree, how much more shall these which be the natural branches be grafting their own olive tree? He's not saying it was God didn't do something unnatural. This bringing in the Gentiles and the possibility of Jews being saved if he's talking to the Gentiles here, he's just saying you could take a branch off a wild olive tree and graft it in there. Okay, that is unnatural, but it's just an analogy, one to the other. But what happened was not unnatural. What happened was, is God gives everybody the free choice decision. And if Jews or Gentiles, either one, choose to repent of their sins, any and each and all sins, and live the Christian life, they can be saved. It doesn't matter if you're Jew or Gentile. That's not unnatural. God, that's what God did. That's not unnatural. It's a natural thing. God doesn't force anybody. It's compared to something going on that's unnatural. Taking a branch from a wild olive tree and putting it in another tree. God, he's saying God had the right to do that. Now, I want you to look back in Romans 1, while we're there, Alan, and look at what it says. Now, there's the text. We've already read it. All right? Now, this doesn't have malakoia or arsenikoia in it. Okay? So, we're not going to argue about the Greek word. We read that. It says the men were burning in their lust one toward another and did something unnatural. The women were doing the same thing with the women. To me, even though those two words aren't used, it's obviously talking about lesbians and it's talking about gay men. Now, if you look at it for yourself, I'm not here to force you or to twist your arm. You make up your own mind. I'm just presenting to you what God said, what the Bible said. The evidence. In fact, to present the evidence. I think that's fair enough. Now, here are the words, the terms that we use to refer to what's going on here. Uncleanness, dishonor, vile, change the natural use against nature, leaving the natural use, unseemly, error. Again, I didn't use those terms. I'm just here to read to you what God said about it. Then let's turn back to Matthew 19, 4 through 5. Appreciate Pat going into that passage, and she talked a good bit about the eunuch, which is, I think is mentioned in verse 10. She said that's referring to a marginalized person. I won't necessarily at this point agree or disagree with that, because I don't think it's central to the point. I'm trying to bring up number 9. Did I skip number 3?
Yeah.
All right, we'll come back to number 3. That was an accident. That wasn't central to my point about the eunuch. I think we all know that a eunuch, whether it's forced upon them or it's voluntary, is somebody that sells, okay? But notice earlier in the text how God defined marriage. And remember I mentioned my last speech about we had the controversy over the last decade or so about whether we should allow homosexual marriages in this country. Here we have God defining what marriage was at the beginning. He says, have you not read that he which made them at the beginning If you go back, you'll see he's quoting from Genesis 2:24 in the Garden of Eden. Adam and Eve made them male and female. And said, for this cause shall the man leave father and mother, shall cleave to his wife, they twain shall be one flesh. In the very definition of marriage from the very beginning, and Jesus reaffirms it, this is he said marriage should be between male and female. Notice in 1 Corinthians 7, verse 2, Paul writing, he says, to avoid fornication, let every man have his own wife, let every woman have her own husband. Again, it's male and female. Go back to number 3, the one I skipped, Adam. That was definitely not Paul. She mentioned about Leviticus, but I want you to go back to Leviticus. This is the one I don't want you to be offended by, but I want you to know this information is in here. You go back and look in your own Bibles and see if what I'm saying is true. I believe I got this out of the King James Version. This is in the Old Testament. I want you to consider this. Here's the verse. I outline with mankind as if womankind is abomination. I explain here, we're not talking about lie in the sense of just lying down at the campfire and going to sleep. We're talking about, and that's why it says, as with womankind. In other words, he's talking about lying down with them sexually, not just snoring with them. Okay, he says it's an abomination. Let me go on and I'll answer any questions out here in the foyer at any time. But I want to go on with my speech here. Now, this word abomination, last time we went through 6 or 8 passages in the Old Testament where we had the same Hebrew word, translated abomination. It referred to, I believe, having it committing adultery with your neighbor's wife. It talked about 2 or 3 places with sacrificing your children to this Moloch, this false god. Called that an abomination. And the other category, what was that other category, remember? Do you remember abomination? That was the second one. The first one was adultery. I guess that was the only two I pretty much had. There were some other ones about, like Proverbs 6, 7 are abomination, lie, murder. So we had, idolatry. Did I mention that? Idolatry, sacrificing your children, adultery. This word abomination here, that's the Hebrew word, the same Hebrew word. This is not talking about something that's like ritual uncleanness, as we talked about mixing up the fabrics in the wrong way. Now notice, in the same breath, he condemns homosexuality. He says, don't lie with another man. Don't have sex with another man. And don't have sex with an animal. Now, as I say, I know this, I don't want to offend you, but he's basically saying, man, don't have sex with another man. Don't have sex with an animal. And he says the same thing here. Man, don't have sex with another man. Man, don't have sex with an animal. In the very next breath. You see, he's not talking about some kind of ritual uncleanness here. He's talking about a matter of right and wrong. And why do I bring up this extreme? It's not because I want to offend you, but it's because I hope that we have some common agreement here that we can work with. I'm confident all of us will agree that this right here is a sin. An utterly despicable sin to have sex with an animal. I hope we can agree on that commonly. And I'm saying the Bible puts these two in the same category. Hold my time off. Next, everybody turn to 1 Samuel 20:41. Pat made an argument there on David and Jonathan. Now, in spite of what you have been told, David and Jonathan were not gay. There's no evidence that they're gay. If you can find a passage in the Bible that intimates in any way they had sexual relations, you show it to me. There's not one. Let's look at the passage. She didn't read it, but this is the one she referred to. She said something about David exceeding himself. Then she said, I tried to write it, but it's quick. Prior to exceeding, they were kissing and caressing. Okay? Now let's look at 20:41, 1 Samuel. Jonathan evidently has a lad here, maybe just a guy that's his assistant that helps him. And it says in verse 41, as soon as the lad was gone, David arose out of a place toward the south, fell on his face to the ground, bowed himself 3 times, and they kissed one another. That's David and Jonathan. And wept one another with one another until David exceeded. Let me address the kissing part. First of all, it didn't say they caressed. Let me address the kissing part. Put up number 27. I guess I'm going out of order there, Adam. Now, those of you who are familiar with the Bible realize that in the parts of the Bible, in the Old Testament and the New, in many countries, even today, like the Middle East, in other countries, perhaps in Italy, I'm not sure everywhere, they have a different form of primary greeting than we do. We shake hands. In those countries, even today, they kiss. Man to man. But it is not a sensual or sexual kiss. It's a form of greeting. And that's all that's being talked about here when they kiss. In the Middle East, at that time, that was a form of greeting. Alright? They kissed each other. Let me mention, do you remember Judas kissed Jesus to betray him? That was not a sexual or sensual kiss. It was a form of greed. In that case, it was a negative thing. It wasn't. He was showing to the other men. They didn't know Jesus by faith. Evidently, they were showing. Judas was showing which one was Jesus Christ. We all remember that story. It was not a sexual kiss. It was a form of greeting at that time. Romans 16:16 commanded the churches to greet one another with a holy kiss. That's not talking about something sexual. If it were, that would mean that the heterosexual men were supposed to have a homosexual kiss with another heterosexual man. No, it was not a sensual kiss. It was just a form of greeting. At that time, in that society, kissing was a customary way of greeting one another, even man to man. And it says, if not, I've already mentioned that point, we'll go on. This kind of kiss is still a customary form of greeting in many parts of the world today. David and Jonathan's kiss was just a form of greeting. It was not sexual. Now put up number 28. Alan, let's talk about David exceeding himself. Now remember, that was in 2041. It says, until David exceeded in the King James Version. What does that word mean? Well, I think Pat was trying to say that... I'm sorry I'm being so frank, but... Pat, you correct me if I'm wrong, it's at least close to what you were trying to say. And he corrected me in your speech if I was wrong. That David's sexual organ was enlarged because of the physical attraction to Jonathan. But anyway, it says he exceeded himself. But let's notice what the Hebrew word means is translated exceeded here. According, this is a famous dictionary of Old Testament Hebrew words. He says that, so David wept most violently. But that's what that text is talking about. It has nothing to do with sex. It says he was exceeding Jonathan in weeping. Remember, these people were close friends. I have a chart. Put it up there very briefly. Because I think everybody can relate to this. And it is number 36, and we'll come back to this one, which is number 28. Do y'all remember the Brian song that was made in about 1970? Brian Piccolo, because everybody here is probably about like me, since we're near 45. Brian Piccolo and Gail Sayers. And, of course, Brian Piccolo is dying of cancer. And I think at this point, he's on his deathbed. I don't think he's dead yet. Gail Sayers is accepting the Most Valuable Player Award. Everybody remember the story? It's very touching. It made me cry. It was so sad. But Gail Sayers says in his award, I think he dedicates this Most Valuable Player to Brian Piccolo. He says, I love Brian Piccolo. I want you to love him too. Gail Sayers loved Brian Piccolo, according to the depiction in that movie. They were very close friends. There was no sexual relationship between them whatsoever at all. But he loved him in the sense of a very close friend, like I love my dad very much. He passed away in 2001. All of us here that have lost a parent. Like our dad or mother. We love our parents, and they pass away, and we think about them every day. That doesn't mean that we love them. We have friends that we love, even of the same gender, the same sex. That doesn't mean it's a homosexual love. It means they're very close friends. And that's what's going on with David and Jonathan. They have this customary form of grief. And Alan, you can go back to number 28. And then they cry because they're going to have to leave each other. The idea that David exceeded Jonathan in weeping. Here's some other translations, the New King James Version. They wept together, but David more so. There's nothing in the word that has anything to do with sex. It's just saying he exceeded him in crying. David wept more than Jonathan. New International Version, they wept together, but David wept the most. The New American Standard Version, wept together, but David more. Notice the same Hebrew word is found in 1 Kings chapter 10, verse 23. The same word is translated exceeded here. It says, so King Solomon exceeded all the kings of the earth for riches and for wisdom. Is that talking about that he had sex or was attracted physically in a sexual organ enlarged? That happened over all the kings of the earth? That's not what it's saying. That means he exceeded the kings for riches and for wisdom. Alright? Thank you, Michael. Now put up number 23. I don't know. I want everybody to look at the bottom of this chart to see this. Number 23. We're still talking about David and Jonathan. I want to remind you that David was married to seven women and had many children. 1 Chronicles 3, 1 through 9. Does that sound like David was homosexual? The account of David taking Bathsheba, 2 Samuel 11, please allow me to talk, 2, 3, 4, shows obvious heterosexual desires. What he saw her bathing, he is a woman. Is my time up? Okay. And he was attracted to her and he committed adultery with her. And then, in effect, he had her husband murdered, in effect. That was wrong. That was sin. And rape, heterosexual rape, is wrong. As well as homosexual rape, sir, can be wrong. Like many of the Catholic priests seem to be having a problem with that with boys. But that doesn't make, just because a priest does that with a boy doesn't mean another homosexual who doesn't do something wicked like that is wrong. You see how I don't say, this man did something wicked, that makes this wicked. You don't throw out the baby with the bathwater, but this is a heterosexual desire by David. He's not a homosexual. Jonathan was married and had sons. This doesn't sound like a homosexual to me. And then Ruth and Naomi, number 42, Alan. Everybody wants to turn there. Ruth 1:16.
So you're picking on the Catholics too.
Now, what I mean was, I was using that as illustration. I hope you can understand my point. I'm saying that just because a homosexual does something that you agree is wrong, doesn't condemn all other homosexuals that don't do that.
I understand.
Okay? In Romans 1:16, it says, remember, Naomi has two sons, and they're married. One of them is married to Ruth. The two sons die. She has two daughters-in-law. They're of a different religion, evidently. The other daughter-in-law decides to go back to her people, but all Ruth is saying here is that I'm going to follow you and stay with you. There's nothing in this that says anything about sex. Read it. Ruth said, entreat me not to leave thee or to return from following after thee. For whither thou goest, I will go. Whither thou lodgest, I will lodge. Thy people shall be my people. Thy God shall be my God. I don't see anything in there sexual. It's just saying, I'm not going back to my people like my other sister, my sister-in-law. I'm going to stay with you. I think maybe that Pat mentioned about Reverend Nancy Wilson. She's the pastor of the Metropolitan Community Church in Los Angeles, member of the Board of Elders at MCC. Did Ruth and Naomi have a lesbian relationship? That was the question raised to her. She said, this is a quote, there's no way to know. I would ask Pat if she agrees with Ms. Wilson. There's no way to know. Now, I don't completely agree with Ms. Wilson because I believe when you look at the context, you can see they're not lesbians. You can see they're not homosexuals. But at least she admits that there's nothing in the Bible to indicate that they are homosexuals. Now put up number 21. Let's look at Ruth and Naomi and see if it sounds like to you there's anything about lesbian activity there, okay? I have yet to see anything that shows they're lesbians. First of all, Naomi was the wife of Elimelech, and their two sons, Mahlon and Chilion. That's the two sons that married the other daughter-in-law and Ruth. Ruth was of the wife of Naomi's son, Mahlon. Naomi was old when Ruth's husband died. Naomi expected Ruth to seek another husband. That's what she expected, to seek another husband, not a woman. Boaz regarded Ruth as a virtuous woman because she did not chase after the young men, Ruth 3:10 through 11. Notice, he considered her to be virtuous because she didn't chase after the other young men. She was younger than Boaz. He didn't say because he considered her virtuous because she didn't chase after the other young women. My opponent would have expected her to be tempted to chase the younger women. Ruth married Boaz and had a proper sexual relationship between a husband and wife, chapter 4, verse 13. The only sexual relationship of these women shown by biblical record, the only ones are with their husbands. That's the only ones. This is obviously heterosexuality. Now, how much time now, Michael?
45 seconds.
I will sit down now, except for, I tell you what I'll do. I'll go to number 11, and I want to remind you of what 1 Corinthians 6, verse 11 says, because I didn't get through it that last time. Such were some of you. Some of these people have been homosexuals, not all of them. They had stopped it. They had to stop to be forgiven. Preach, you can stop it. You need to stop it. And you can avoid God's judgment for it if you will stop it. Okay? It's just like any sin. All you have to do is repent of it and stop it, and you will be forgiven. God loves everybody. Thank you so much for listening.